Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day, everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett, and today we are talking burn men. So basically, people it's a yellow flag, essentially, where we will still draft them, but it's certainly a buyer's beware. And to help me do that, Stevie Fizz. Steve, how you doing, pal?
I'm good, John. I'm probably not as good as you. We know this is your show.
My show? Oh, I love the burn man, just sticking the knives into him. And
if there was ever a bloke who threw shade at players, it was down on him, loves to stick the boot in.
I'm the guy.
That's Jay Crockett's wheelhouse.
Damn
right there.
Straight it is. Really looking forward to it. But Steve, we had a bit of an argument the other day in regards to it.
We have an argument.
But another food argument in regards to our nachos. Big nacho fans.
Oh yeah, forgot about this one.
Steve, you like to go with the guacamole.
Love the guacamole.
See, I think avocado is the devil's food and should be banned all around the world.
But it's a superfood.
I don't care. Whereas I like to throw the mince in my nachos with the salsa and the cheese.
Which
any sane person would do.
Which is a heart attack.
Yes.
And a lot more effort.
Not really.
Absolutely.
Well, how do you cut an avocado? I've never cut
it. I don't cut it. I just buy it.
Well, you've still got to peel it, don't you?
Scoop it out of the punnet. That's what you do with it, Dale.
Yeah, see, I've never used an avocado, so I wouldn't know how to cook with it. But,
oh, okay.
But Steve's going to put up a Twitter poll. How do you like your nachos? With mince or
really?
With guacamole?
You're hanging on to this.
I am going to hang on to it.
Jesus,
I think I can win.
Christ. My God, let it go.
I will not let it go.
I didn't even put it up because I felt it was so just blatantly one-sided. I mean, look, and I like nachos with mince, but that's with chili con carne. I dip the nachos in the chili con carne. I call it chili con carne shows.
That's a trademark right there.
Bloody oath it is. But it just... Anyway, all right, well, Twitter poll it.
Twitter poll, but stipulation, you've got to have the taco seasoning with the mince to give that flavour.
Yeah, well, otherwise it'd just be dog's food.
Yes, it would be. But welcome to you, Statesman. What are your thoughts on nachos, mate?
I have no thoughts on nachos. I'll just keep to my salads, gents.
You don't. How do we recruit this guy if he's having salads?
You don't win friends with salad, Jono.
You do not. That got through the vetting process.
Did it ever. Christ almighty. Beer, Parma, that's fine. Didn't find this salad nachos thing. But obviously the draft was through the week, Statesman. You're obviously a bit more of a keen draft observer than we are. Is there any nuggets of gold, anything you really piqued your interest?
Look, a lot of quality players, but there always are. And the pundits are actually talking about this possibly being the next super draft. Obviously, 2001 is rated like that with Luke Ball, Hodge and Juddy coming through in the top three, but we had some absolute gems in Bartell, Mitchell, Lewis, all that crew coming through in the 1 year, and they're expecting that that'll be the case from the 2016, especially in those top 30. Unfortunately, I don't think there's going to be a lot that are fantasy relevant, with exception of a couple of midfielders that possibly went through the Brisbane line. So Hugh McCluggage is a great chance to get a lot of footy, just where the situation of the Brisbane Lions are, especially with a player like Hanley sort of moving out of their system. So I think Hugh, although come with a price tag in your other formats, will be worthwhile having. If you look at a draft situation, I think he'll probably be the only player, but I think there'll be a few that picked up on the rookie draft as well that might be quite worthwhile, and one I'll talk about in future times in Jake Barrett, I think will be a gun midfielder for the Brisbane Lions next year.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of talent went to the Queensland
State
in general, like some good opportunities for the guys at the Gold Coast Suns as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Those two sides were obviously looking for midfielders, and this was very much a midfielder's draft. I think there was only two or three tall players taken in the first round, which is very unusual. So you're going to see a lot of those players playing a fair bit of footy this year, but nothing that'll really affect our selections when it comes to draft time.
Excellent. And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can head over to Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors, or head over to Facebook, where you just type in the Draft Doctors, hit the like button there. And if you want to help the show, head over to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, leave us a review, 5 stars. We love that. We're quite happy to read them out on the show. It can be serious, can be funny. We don't care. Just hit that 5 stars and hit the reviews.
Yeah, and we're also on SoundCloud. The podcast will also be available on SoundCloud for people who like using that particular app, I guess.
But moving on today, we are talking my favourite, burn men. The guys who have hurt us in the past or have the potential to hurt us. As I said at the start of the show, we're not going to shy away from drafting them, but they are certainly a buy beware. And to kick us off, Statesman.
Yes, unlike my co-presenters, I'm going for the jugular here. Effectively, I've picked players that are all in their top five of their positions in 2016, and I see a massive drop happening for all three of them. And there is actually a fourth one that I'll mention at the end of our show that might be worthwhile discussing and people just possibly trying to avoid. So my first one was right up there in the forward rankings in 2016, but I do believe that he'll be a mid-only in 2017, and that is Aaron Hall. Now, going through the data, this is Aaron Hall's record, and talking Dream Team points as I normally do. 2012, he averaged 62 as a forward. 2013, 66 as a forward. 2014, 57 average as a forward. And then he had what was considered a breakout year, which was really a run of 8 games where he moved into the midfield in 2015 after starting the year up forward. But he only actually averaged 76. Now, those that were watching that were thinking, well, if Aaron Hall gets into the midfield and gets a fair bit of time, then he could really explode. And that he did in 2016, averaging 105. But he spent the majority of his time in the midfield. This year, Gold Coast lose Prestia, but he only delivered 14 games. And, of course, O'Meara. But he did not play one senior game this year, giving Aaron a great opportunity to spend some time in the midfield. They regain Ablett with 14 games this year, and Swallow, who played none. So that sort of cancels out the other two. Their gains this year is Michael Barlow, and there's no doubt with what they actually need as a club, Michael Barlow will be a starting ball-getting midfielder in 2017. Pierce Hanley and Jared Lyons, let alone going for some young guns that we just talked about before, which will be rotated through that midfield group, and that includes young Ben Ainsworth, who's right and ready to go and play senior footy. And he'll also compete against Tuke Miller, who looks to be favoured ahead of him. So therefore, my prediction is Aaron Hall will reduce his midfield time. He'll still be rotated through there, no doubt, but his midfield time reduced to 30 to 40% of his time, and I expect his average to drop, and his average should be around the 80 to 85 points per game, which when he crosses over as a forward, shouldn't be too bad, but again, on a drafting position, really, that's an F5, not an F1 or a mid-3. So I'm predicting a 20-point drop, and that is a big burn for someone that potentially could be drafted in the first round.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he started the year
on fire.
House on fire, just unbelievable. But yeah, losing that forward status, it looks like it'll shape up to really hurt him. Look, I've got the list in front of me of all of our picks, And without giving the game away, Statesman, you know, you say you're, all your picks are top five. There's a fair chance a few of them are going to lose their fantasy relevancy next year when they become mid-only. If you're talking, and that's fine, like I agree with you on all of them, like, would you say now's the time, if you're in a keeper league, make some trades in the off season? Is that sort of where you're heading with these sort of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I just can't see Aaron Hall long term being a midfielder. If he was playing at any club in the midfield, he'd be a very, very high scorer. There's no doubts about it. He can find the footy. But I just don't see him getting the opportunity. It was amazing this year, with all those injuries that they had, they still found a time to drop Aaron Hall. So I don't think he's that much in favour at the club, first and foremost. And I think there's going to be so many people ahead of him. So on a draft strategy situation, I'll be trading him while he's got the currency.
And as well, he had the injuries himself this year. So there's question marks on the body holding up throughout the season as well.
Absolutely. And look, I do rate him. I reckon he's a fantastic player and a great young Tasmanian boy. But unfortunately, I just don't see him getting the midfield time he deserves.
And there's a Statesman just striking the match on Aaron Hall off the bat. Moving on to you, Steve.
Yeah, I won't say much about Tasmania because it's draft week, so they're not really relevant.
Four drafted.
My first burn man is Jack Gunston. Really reliable forward. Finished on total points as the forward 11 in Dream Team and forward 10 in Supercoach. So
pretty handy.
That's bloody handy. He was still as F2 by average.
Yep.
Last 3 years in Dream Team, 82, 92, 88 average. In Supercoach, 90, 96, 92. And at least 20 games in each of those seasons. So, I mean, that's ultra reliable, ultra consistent. Why he's a burn man isn't his form. It's what's happening up the ground. Hawthorn have lost Jordan Lewis, Sam Mitchell, and Brad Hill. Now, these guys are averaging around 12 of their four forward 50 entries per game. These guys are the best ball users at Hawthorn. In the midfield, they're talking 74, 74, and 72% disposal efficiency. Now, the guys who are left there and that they've brought in, the quality just isn't there. Like Isaac Smith was actually their number one for inside 50s this year. And he's all right at 74%. But the next best ball winners, we're talking Liam Shields goes at 58%. Tom Mitchell goes at 68%. Luke Hodge goes at 68%. Will Langford goes at 63%. Even Jago O'Meara, as good as he's rated, his retention rate is under 70%. So the ball use is down. Hawthorn aren't really a big inside 50 team anyway. They're just middle of the pack. They're just very efficient. Now, I feel like if Hawthorn are going to slip a little bit, maybe people feel that way. They're going to have less opportunity and the quality is not going to be as good. And as a result, Jack Gunston is going to suffer. He's not a guy who goes out and wins his own ball. He does his best work on the lead, converts a lot of his shots. I feel like because you see him every year, plays 20-something games, averages pretty well, that he's going to be drafted as an F2. Maybe even if someone sleeps on their forwards, he's drafted as their first forward. And I just don't feel like he's going to return value on that. I don't think it's a big... Like, he averaged, 88 last year in Dream Team. If he drops, say, 2 marks and 1 possession a game or 2 possessions a game, he's not even rosterable.
No.
It's
And that also goes to the fact those averages have dropped with Jared Rufford with his illness. Jared Rufford was the number one forward there at Hawthorn. And Gunston was number two, whereas this 2016, Gunston had to be the number one target forward.
Well, the numbers are similar to 2 years ago, a little bit better in Dream Team, but my concern isn't... I think he's
the supply's not going to be there.
The consistent Ruffield or no, that's not the problem. The worry is what's happening up the ground. Now, I will say the caveat is if Sean Burgoyne plays midfield, and I believe he will, but I just don't feel that confident about it, that I'm going to find myself in a position to draft Jack Gunston, especially in our league, Jono, because we play with buddy Hawthorn fanatics.
That's right. So, hey, good luck to if they grab him, pick one with their pick first forward.
Yeah, well, it might happen. Well, what do you guys think?
Yeah, it's certainly a potential Burman there. I think it's rather than who's left the club, it's more about who's playing for him right there and then. And it's O'Meara and Roughhead. If they're playing, then I think all of a sudden he's going to get the delivery he needs, and he's also going to get the second defender rather than the first one, and that's going to be a huge difference. If neither of those are playing, I think you're on the ball, and I think he's the person that's going to burn you.
I agree. I like the pick. My first guy I've got is Mark Blixars from Geelong. In 2015, he had a breakout year, averaging 104 Supercoach, 97 Dream Team, and crazy Brad Scott. Is it Brad Scott? Chris Scott. I can never remember. They look alike. Surprised everyone by playing him in the midfield and coming up with his third man tactic as well, which, you know, 6'9" giant running around in the midfield scared the hell out of everyone, so no one went near him. Come 2016, with the arrival of Reece Stanley and Zach Smith, it's pushed him out of that ruck role as well, so he wasn't taking the centre hit-outs. You got the arrival of Patrick Dangerfield to the club too, severely hampered his midfield minutes. So Brad Scott said, what the hell do I do with this guy? Pushed him in the tagging role due to his elite endurance. Now, the thing with Mark Blixars, he was a ruck midfielder. There is a very good chance he's going to lose that ruck status this year, and that scares the hell out of me, because this year his points dropped 14 Supercoach points and 11 in fantasy. That is not good. And if he's playing a tagging role, shutting down, I can see them dropping even more, and I would not want him an 85 averaging midfielder for me. Steve?
Yeah, he's an interesting cat.
Certainly is.
Isn't he? If he loses ruck status, obviously he's going to be really hard to draft, but I think I'd still find room for him at the very end of my bench. Just with, you know, Scott Selwood isn't exactly a pitcher of health. Josh Caddy is out of the picture. Not that Mark Blixars is exactly a goal-kicking midfielder.
No.
The changing of roles worries me, but you're talking about a best and fairest winner who is arguably a first three rounds draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
At a pretty amazing discount. I maintain some optimism, but it really comes down to where he gets drafted. Look, if he loses the ruck status, he's not going to be
a high on your board.
High on your board. So I'd say, these are guys we're not crossing off our list.
But gee, there's a big yellow flag in front of Mark Blixar's name.
It's a real worry. But again, you're talking about a guy 2 years ago, one of the best and fairest.
Completely different role, though.
I understand that, and that's the problem is you've got Menegola, who's come along leaps and bounds. Scott Selwood, who they've invested in.
Yep.
Mitch Duncan, who can play. We know that. Yeah, maybe there's no time for him, but I feel like he might just be worth a gamble.
Unless they do push him down back for a tall, who knows? Who knows? It's very one to watch over the summer.
And my thoughts are that you need to be draftable before you can burn you. And if he's a mid-only, I don't think he's draftable at all. But if you have him in a keeper league, I'd package him up with Aaron Hall and offer him both for Brett Deledio.
You can package all three
and get that year out of Brett Deledio. Wait, what?
Chuck in Ablett as well.
Oh,
my God. The Statesman is just
throwing shade everywhere.
We're recording this on Monday, people. Statesman's obviously got a case in the Mondays, to quote Office Space. You might be able to get... who was the guy I liked? I don't know. Who's an old bastard? He's useless.
Dalhouse?
He's not that old. Anyway, Robert Murphy. Move on.
Statesman, moving on to your second burn man.
Yes, my second burn man is a player that was in the defensive lineup, and he played in defence all year, Steve, just to clarify that some of my players are retaining their status. And that's James Kelly. Now, James obviously got delisted by Geelong, was picked up by Essendon, which was a great pickup for them, played a fantastic year, and would you believe he had a career high average of possessions as well as dream team points. That's the highest he's ever scored, average 99.1. Previous to that, his last 2 years at Geelong was 87 and 81.7, 21 and 17 games respectively. And then he obviously had his four big years being 94, 96, 97 and 95 between 2010 and 2013. So it was a career high this year. The reason was that obviously Essendon pressure, and when they did get the ball in defence, they chipped it around to try and keep possession. And James, being a very smart player, made sure he was continually being an option for him in space, so using that running ability that he has to make sure he got in space. So what actually happened, he actually averaged two more marks per game than he ever had in any other season. So that just kept on giving him the plus six structure through the Dream Team scoring. So what's going to happen in 2017 is Essendon get automatically 10 players back. They get the number one draft pick through. They've got a stockpile of players that have been developing over that 12-year period when the 12 were out. And all of a sudden, they're going to be shored up and they're going to be a much more attacking team. There'll be a lot less chipping around in the defence. They will still use James, probably not on the big journeys, but they'll still use him between the 14 and 16 games to help educating the young defenders. But what he won't do is get as much football. He won't mark it as much because they'll actually be attacking, looking for those key forwards, giving them an option down the wing, and using fast track running players and going through the Heppels and Stantons and those types. So you'll see James actually drop probably between 8 and 10 possessions per game. He'll still be valuable for the club. He's been a great player for a long time, but the reality is he won't be close to being in the top 15 defenders, let alone being in the top 5.
And that was only 12 months those Essendon players were out, not 12 years.
Sorry. I meant the 12 were out for a year.
No, great argument as a Burman. I thought he was very good this year, Kelly, especially because he is so aerodynamic with that one nut of his.
Jeez.
Yeah, I went there. Don't look at me like that.
That's low-hanging fruit.
Well, it's only one fruit to hang.
Well, it might hang lower. There's no competition.
Does it sit central out of that? Yeah. we're waffling. No, totally agree. With all those guys coming back, I think Kelly will be used sparingly and we'll see a massive drop-off in points for him. So what do you think, Steve?
Even if the points were there, which I don't think they will be, I mean, I'm a big fan of James Kelly. Even if the possessions dropped off, I think he can still maintain something of an average with his... he has got a fantastic capacity to tackle.
Yep.
But I just don't think the games are going to be there, as Statesman alluded to. I know damn well he's going to play 7 games because that's what he needs to get to 300.
Okay.
But, if you're talking about holding guys like Zach Merritt and Travis Collier and these
Aaron
sort of...
Francis and all these kids.
Brent Sturton back... I just don't see it happening. There's no way in my mind that he plays. Yeah, I think the range that Statesman alluded to, that'd be the high end, to be honest. Yeah. I'd see him more around, 10 to 12.
Yep. No, totally agree. Who's your second boom man, Steve?
I've gone for one of the guys who got thrown away for a bag of chips this year, and that's Jordan Lewis. And... Not
were they chicken twisties?
Don't. Hey. Hey. I love chicken twisties.
So do I.
It'd be more like cheese Well, have you tried those taco flavor ones? That was just terrible.
No, veggie anyway, night.
Look, I'm not picking on the D's because of the whole tainted Jesse Hogan situation. I'm not, I promise you.
But he is.
In Ultimate Footy last year, he had an ADP of 22. So that is a high pick.
Yes.
And he's been a star in Dream Team scoring formats for the last 3 years. He's had a few roles over the years. Okay. Yes. We're talking 07 to 09, averaged around 25, was in the guts. 10 to 13, 22 disposals. Played a little bit more forward. 14 to 16, 28 disposals around about on average. He's an outside player. He's improved in tackles, but he's never been a good high volume tackle. I love high volume tackle players.
He's not Jack Viney country.
Not Jack Viney country. Now, he's going into a team. They're not the Hawks. They play a different style of footy.
Mm.
The Hawks chip it around, take a lot of marks. Melbourne, they go the other way, more contested style of footy, lay a lot of tackles. So I feel like if his marks are going to drop off, I feel like his tackling game isn't going to... It's not what they need. They need him to be putting the ball inside 50. That's
lace what out to Jesse.
Lace out to Jesse. They've already made jokes about it in the preseason that this is happening. Laces out to Jesse. They have inside mid. They need to improve the ball use going inside 50. Like their top possession winners, Nathan Jones, Bernie Vince, Jack Viney, they're all 70% or below ball users. Add in Angus Brayshaw, Ben Kennedy. They're not good ball users. Mm. Jordan Lewis provides that good ball use. Melbourne are building. I think, you know, there's a few teams who are in that sort of range that are like St Kilda's and whatnot. But Melbourne, they look to be pretty good. I think Jordan Lewis improves the team, but it's the expense of his fantasy output, which he couldn't care less about.
No, unless he's playing the league himself.
Well, he might. I feel like he drops to 24 disposals, 4 marks, 3 tackles. I actually don't think it hurts his super coach as much because he's going to be playing in the forward half. I think he's going to be delivering the ball inside forward 50 more, maybe get some more...
goals himself.
Goal assists, maybe get some goals, goals himself. But I think because of his average, because he never misses games because he's never in the action getting tackled and getting his head knocked off.
He's just knocking other people's heads off.
Not in the contest either.
No.
Wait, what? I didn't say that. But I feel like he's drafted, especially in your Dream Team scoring format leagues, as an M2, maybe as a high M3, but I think he returns M5 value, which you just can't have.
No, and I've never liked Jordan Lewis, ever.
I know that. I don't need to convince you.
You don't need to convince me. It's
I'm just telling the people.
Telling
speaking
the people.
Of the people.
Something about that bald...
What is that, wait. That look at who you're talking to.
That thing on his head. No, he's got hair, but it's like that little patch on his head.
That's the thing. That's people bald from there. Others recede.
Right. Yeah.
There's different ways to bald.
Never liked
him. Sorry, your whole family looks like a goddamn Yeti.
Damn straight. I did draft him reluctantly in our listener league this year, but I've traded him out very quickly, so... Don't like him. See the points going down. I can even see him playing that defensive forward.
No.
Okay.
My thoughts on Jordan Lewis, you're going to hear me say this very few times, but he's only 30 years of age, gentlemen. For some odd reason, he was always a very solid player, but the age of 27, he grew another leg and went from averaging in Dream Team around the 90s to the 109-110 mark. Now, I'm still a little bit unsure, but I think it's when he actually come from being an inside ball getter to actually being an outside player. Now, I'm assuming that Melbourne have grabbed him to be an outside player. So I actually generally can't see what's going to change in his role. The environment around him is what will be different. But I reckon what Melbourne have absolutely got is the hard nuts. They've got the Vineys. They've got the Nathan Jones. They're going to get that hard ball. You can even throw in Bernie Vince into that mould where they're going to get all the strong ball and actually use him on the outside. So he's going to get the marks and he's going to get the kicks and delivery into the forward line. And I would say that Jordan Lewis should be a reasonably safe draft pick, and I'd be more than happy to pick him up ahead of Ablett and a couple of other players, Aaron Hall, that we've mentioned before. But there's always a risk when you change clubs, and it's just on a new coach. What's he going to think the role is, and how much did the coach have a say of him being nabbed, or was it just the case we had a great bargain to get a premiership player? So I don't know if he's there for it, but if he's there for that sort of outside ball usage, I reckon the hard nuts will get the footy and they'll get it out to Jordan Lewis and he'll get a fair few touches of the footy, and I think he'll keep averaging above 100. So an M2 and M3, I reckon he'll be fantastic.
Yeah, I see the tackle rate. He was always around a three or less per game tackler, and he's improved that. The marks are good, but I can't see that happening. I think the touches are fine, and that's why I say he probably won't drop off as much in Supercoach, but in Dream Team, I reckon he's going to he's going to burn you.
Yep.
And that's fine. We can all disagree. We're not putting yellow lines through these. Or we're not putting red lines through these guys, but we're
putting yellow flags up.
I probably won't end up with a good share of him because I feel like he's going to drop off. Statesman might feel the other way, and when I whop him because he names Jordan Lewis captain, that's going to be fine. that's going to be fine. him and Brett Deledio can be sitting scoring
with James
scoring
Kelly
80 each, and that's fine.
My second burn man, similar mould to Statesman, it's Brendan Goddard. Good old Captain Crazy is my burn man. Goddard averaged 98 Supercoach, 99 Dream Team in 2016. But listeners, do not be fooled by these numbers. He was playing in a midfield without Heppel, Stanton, Watson, Hooker and the rest. He was the go-to outside guy. These guys are all back now, fit and firing, ready to go, and we found out Zach Merritt is going to be a hell of a player through that midfield, as well as a fit Zaharakis before he got the tag, who had the potential to score. Aaron Francis, got all these players emerging. I cannot see him getting that midfield time. Also, with John Worsfold having his pick of the A-team now, where does he play? Does he go back in defence, where we know he's scored like crazy before, but I don't see him getting those points when you've got Hurley, who else is in the Essendon defence? D, Brown, they were all very good last year. He's getting old, he's 32 next year, and each year his points have slowly dropped off. Midfield value, I can see like it's 98 now, 96, but I can see it dropping down to under the 90s, which for me is M7 bench and no part for me. Thank you.
I think you're smoking crack, Jono. I'm smoking crack. I just think you hate Brendan Goddard.
Oh, there's that too.
Which weighs heavily into. I know how your mind works, sort of, because sometimes you baffle me with how it doesn't work. but you're talking about guys that average 130 off. Halfback, I don't see why.
In his prime.
I know he's in his prime, but I feel like I'm in my prime and he's 4 years younger.
He's an elite athlete.
So? people hate Brendan Goddard. If I was playing in a league where there was position changes mid-year,
yep,
I would actually make sure I got Brendan Goddard because I think he will go back.
Oh, there is a good chance mid-year he'll get that defensive status.
He'll get defensive status. I think he's going to pick apart teams. I think Essendon are going to be so much better this year, and I think a lot of it goes through Brendan Goddard. I don't think he improves, but I don't see that he drops off. He's just such an ultra-consistent player. He always plays. He doesn't miss games. I'm not taking him as my third midfielder.
No.
But if he was my
late-round value.
No, if he was my fifth, I think he's pretty much a Monty for that 98 and 100 average, and 20 plus games.
Yeah,
he just doesn't miss.
He doesn't miss, no.
I mean, and I love the...
All right, Governor, slow down.
I love the, you're terrible. pointing and just yelling at people. It's just because it reminds me of me.
Yeah.
Just everyone else's
time. Oh, look, they should give him a Brownlow for finger pointing. I love it.
If finger pointing and yelling at people was... That's how you become captain, people.
Yeah.
Just yell at everyone. That's leadership right there.
Yes, with Brendan Goddard, I see how he's a potential Burman. There's no doubts about that. But there was one part of that conversation that generally made me interested in Brendan Goddard again, and that's the potential of him becoming a defender. So if the preseason looks like that he's moving back to that half-back flank role because all the midfielders are back and that whole team will gel in a new way, then I'll be drafting quite comfortably and quite comfortably early, thinking that he's going to get that defender status somewhere along the line, because as a defender, he's in the top six without a doubt in the world. As a midfielder, he's just an M3, M4, M5, someone reasonably consistent. But I don't know how Essendon plays out under Worsfold with all the players back, and that's why I think it's a pretty smart pick that he's a potential Burman.
Yep. Absolutely. Your third Burnman statesman.
Yes. One of players that I've selected many years over different formats in Lee Montagne. And the reality is it's just because of the changing face of St Kilda. They are very much a club on the rise. As we saw this year, he had three different roles. And really, he was filling gaps. He started doing that forward role, played a bit in the midfield when they had a few out, and then his end of his season, which was the lowest in the scoring term of things, he was actually helping out in the back line. And every time he went back, his scoring sort of disappeared. And the reality is St Kilda are going to phase him out. And it's because they've got a young midfield group. And these are the people who are going to be ahead of him in the midfield, being Stevens, Ross, Nunes, Billings, Weller, Akers, Dunstan, Gresham, Armitage, Nathan Freeman. No, sorry, that last one was a joke. And, of course, Jack Steele coming into the club. So, unfortunately, he's just going to have a lack of opportunity. And I just don't see where he's going to fit in on a full-time. I can't see where his other allocation, whether it's a defender or a forward, is going to be. I think he's just going to start as a mid this year, and unfortunately, he's going to burn us.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with what you said there. He was pretty much just a plug, filling the gaps for wherever they needed him. And as you said, when he did go back, the scores dropped. And also, as you said, with those emergence, I think they might just rest him occasionally, so the games from him are going to drop too, and obviously going to affect his scoring output.
Yeah, that's a it's an interesting point, the games being rested and so forth. I find that hard to believe when you're talking about a guy like Joey. I actually think I'm a bit different. I actually think he's going to get defensive status, and I'm not sure that he's... He knows where to run, and there's guys who know how to find the pill. I think he's going to be a defender, and I certainly wouldn't be putting a line through him. I'm not sure I'd draft him at whatever his value is, which is 90s.
Too early.
But if I was drafting him in a low 90s value, which in defender is still very, very valuable, I certainly wouldn't be putting a line through him. I'm counting on him being a defender. So there's your guys like your Doherty's and your Shaws and Laird's and...
Simpsons
who are obviously in front of him. But if he was a low-end one, high-end two, I actually think that's pretty reasonable, to be honest.
Yeah, Joey's a challenging one. I've liked him for many years. I just don't see where the opportunities are. But if he does get defender status, as you suggested, Steve, I think he'll be a great pickup.
And, Steve, your final Burnman, please.
Yeah, this one's probably going to actually fly in the face of what a lot of fantasy people will think, and that's Michael Hibbert, because we see Michael Hibbert as the ultimate plus six man, where he gets a mark and a kick. We all had him in your salary cap formats when he broke onto the scene. I'm sure of that. We all did. Well, you missed. Oh, sorry, he played for Essendon. Sorry, obviously yes. You couldn't select him in your team. Do you actually have that when you log onto the system? It just automatically takes all the Essendon players out of your...
Yep.
Yep. Through 2011 to 2015, he's averaged 22 disposals, 5.5 marks, 1.5 tackles, which is pretty fine. But he was generally a 90-plus defender. In the final season where he... before the suspension, that dropped right away. And he looked to be a bit more stay at home. He's moved clubs. And I just feel like people always remember, and this is one of my big things with fantasy, and I hope I can touch on it in the tips and tricks episode in December when we get to that. Wink, wink. We tend to have this memory of salary cap guys or guys who have done well for us in the past, and we look through rose-coloured glasses, I'll say, Jono, upon them. And Michael Hibberd was certainly that for us in defence for a few years. My question is, where does he fit in? And I think it's interesting because Melbourne aren't a mark and kick team. They get it and
run and gun.
They can get it and go, but they're a contested team as well, so that. They tend to have low mark totals when you look at them compared to other teams. So that automatically hurts the plus six. They've got a good young player coming off halfback in Jaden Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
They've also tried to move Bernie Vince there. I think Bernie Vince has to be in front of Michael Hibberd coming off a year off. People can disagree. Hibbard's been a good intercept and disposal player. But he relies on his marks for his scoring. Now, I'm always hesitant to get these guys who rely on intercept marks for scoring, like your...
Easton Wood.
Even Rory Laird. I know he's a fantastic player, but, you know, they can always drop off. Melbourne just don't play that way. It's a new club. He's actually not in full training till after Christmas.
Still injured or...? Well, just not fit.
I don't know. I couldn't find out, but apparently he's not in full training till after Christmas. Whether it's a cleanup, whether it's more injections, that's just a joke. People, please, Essendon fans, don't at us. And he has got a history of soft tissue injuries.
Yep.
So that has happened before. That can't be good. With a year off, we see these guys who are coming back from ACL with a year out. They often, like, look at Prestia this year. Tended to have a bit of soreness,
yep.
And ended up missing quite a few games. Yeah, I don't know what happened with the light just then, Joe. Something to Frankston.
Yep.
Doesn't apply a lot of pressure, low tackles. They like his ball use.
So a typical Melbourne player, just doesn't like to get his hands dirty.
Squibbing around like...
Jesse Hogan.
Mrs. Fizz doesn't like getting her hands dirty. even in his best season, 5 dream team tons.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. There is upside. There's upside. Oh, I'll be honest. I'm the first to say it. There's upside. But this is my prediction. We're talking draft ranges. And if you're going to be a burn man, you've got to be drafted pretty high. I feel like he's going to be drafted as a low-end D2. Maybe a high-end D3.
I'd be with him as a D3.
Okay. Here's the perfect person to compare him. This is my comparison. Would you prefer, and I'll ask this to the both of you, would you prefer Jasper Pittard or Michael Hibberd? I know it's not how you say his name, but still.
Pittard.
Pittard.
No, I prefer that's Pittard.
It's an interesting question. I mean, the one thing that I'd need to double check is if Pittard is actually a reliable week in, week out player. And I ask that question because neither of them have set the world alight. Pittard's probably his best year this year. Previous to that, his highest was 75. Hibberd's only actually delivered an average above 80 twice in his 6 years of footy. And he's only ever played one full season of footy as well. So I like your thoughts of he's a burn man, but... To be honest, I'm not excited about either one of those. If they're my D3 or D4, I may be reasonably happy, but I wouldn't go any earlier.
I just That was my comparison, because I feel like that's a reasonable player to actually we're not debating him, but I feel like that's a reasonable player to compare him to, that will absolutely be a D3.
Yep.
And possibly even a low end
four.
Low end two. But yeah. I think the name Michael Hibberd carries more weight than his actual scoring.
I think it will too. But I won't be having him in my first two picks, that's for sure.
Anyway, who you got? Who you got, Johnny?
Ah, my man.
I see you've actually... I don't even want to... You've taken one of my drafts.
Yeah.
Do I need to give you more gifts? Do I need to wrap it?
You can write all my research. That'd be great.
You're awake. I feel like I do.
You do, actually. My last bird man is Brody Smith. Only 75 average in Supercoach this year, 77 Dream Team. Loves a concussion, this bloke. After getting knocked out twice in 2015, he managed to get all the way to round 22 before getting knocked out in 2016. As we know, if you do get the concussions, your scoring is severely affected. I don't like players that are susceptible to the injuries. Concussions, yes, you can't pick them, but we've seen it from Gaff and a range of other players. With the emergence of Laird and coming into this team...
Curtly Hampton?
He's getting there. I'm getting there. Curtly Hampton. Brody Smith is one who's teased with the scoring, but never quite delivered. Also, that questionable kicking of his where it's just put it on the foot and kick it as far as possible without hitting a target also adds to that burn man status and hurts his scoring as well.
Oh, me. I had him in the Don't Draft show, so I love it. You've convinced me, Jono. You've won me over there, buddy. No, I'm not about him at all. Could he blow up? I guess he could, but I'm pretty happy being wrong.
Yeah.
And I will say yet again, this man is going to hurt me again, because I'll be one of these foolish people that will pick him up and think I'm getting an absolute bargain. I'm convinced at the beginning of last year he had a fantastic start, then the concussions hit. If he's nice and healthy, I think he's got huge potential. But yes, he's going to burn me.
In all formats as well.
But that's where it comes down to, are you okay being wrong? I feel like with a lot of these guys, and I'm not okay being wrong.
Neither am I.
On this guy again. If he blows it up,
good on him. He's burned me before. I don't want any part of him. And I bet you someone's going to pick him up and he's going to tear it up. But Statesman, you've got a surprise burn man for us. We are all ears.
Yes, I was going to put this man as one of my three, and it's not about the standard of the band, it's not about his football ability. This man is an absolute jet, and I'm talking about Scott Pendlebury.
Whoa.
Did we vet this guy?
I don't know. We must have been drunk when we did.
Gary Ablett, Scott Pendlebury.
James Kelly.
Now, there's some football knowledge that actually brings this about. If we all know, Scott Pendlebury had a really slow start to the season this year, and that's because they were trialling one thing. They were looking at how he was going to go on the halfback flank. Now, we look at Collingwood's list, we go, the midfield is superb. In fact, you could almost argue it's starting to become one of the elite. And you add Daniel Wells in that mix, although he will spend a bit of time up forward as well. But Treloar, Wells, Sidebottom, Adams, and then some grunt work from Greenwood and Crisp, and the upcoming status of Degoey, who they want to give a lot more time to this year. That's seven running through there that are actually AFL quality standard, and some real elite players in that. And that's a mixture of real classy talent, some outside run, as well as the grunt inside. They had some problems up forward at the end of 2016, and they started dropping Scott Pendlebury into the forward line because they wanted a touch of class there. Well, you look right through their trade period, their draft. They have looked to fix that, and of course through the free agency as well, and just bringing the ones, the key ones in being Wells, Hoskin Elliott, and Chris Main gives them a whole heap of variety into that forward line, including some touches of class. The one area they haven't fixed is their defence. And if you look at the draft, they were trying to shore up some key defensive posts. What they don't really have is that quality ball user. And who is the man that can do that? Well, one of the best ball users and one of the smartest people in traffic being Scott Pendlebury. And I do believe that that's the type of role that he is going to actually play for this club. And if that happens, rather than getting his 110-plus in Dream Team, he'll be between a 90 and a 95 average as a halfback flanker.
That is
crazy talk.
As hot as a take gets. So do you think he plays with broken ribs for 22 games this year?
No, but even though that was the point and argument, I think what happened at the end of the year showed that wherever their deficiency is, they'll send Scott Pendlebury too. And that's actually where they started playing good footy, right at the end of the year, where Scott was actually spending more time up forward. The problem they've got now is that back line and quality ball from it. Who's the best person to go back? It's not Treloar. It's not Wells. It's not Sidebottom. It's not Adams. It's not Greenwood. It's not Crisp. It's probably not DeGoey, although he could. But I reckon it's Scott Pendlebury.
Well, I was going to say Daniel Wells will be spending most of the year in the medical room, and with Bucks pushing for the finals before he gets the sack, I can't really see Pendle sitting in the back line when they're going to be looking to push for the finals.
It's hard to believe, especially...
Did see it in the pre-season, though.
Yeah, no, look, we saw it through the first month of the season, yeah. And it did affect his scoring tremendously. My question, I just think if Collingwood kind of win games, he's in the midfield. I understand what Statesman's saying is completely valid, but they're going to get Tom Langdon back, who's a fantastic intercept player and actually a pretty good user of the ball.
Yep.
I know he's not the be-all and end-all. Ben Reid's back there. Hope the GOAT. The GOAT goes back there. That's what they drafted him for, is to be the halfback playmaker. They drafted him to be Brennan Goddard, essentially.
They didn't want his brother?
Well, the fact he's
four... The name's Jonty, named after the South African great.
That's a good point. The fact that Matt Sharon Goat is 4 inches taller and can hit every target like 50 metres away kind of differentiates the two. But look, it's such a hot take. It's really hard to... I understand. It's just hard to... if he was there and I was drafting at pick 8, I could not take him. He never doesn't play.
Yeah.
And if you're playing in a league that changes position and you could get Scott Pendlebury as defender?
Hello.
Yes.
if you would like to send any hate...
That would be the ultimate. It'd just be the biggest middle finger to the rest of your league of all time.
If you'd like to send any hate mail towards us, you can do that over social media, where we are on Twitter at the Draft Doctors. Before we go, Statesman?
Well, there's the strategy. Let him get drafted as a midfielder, someone pick 8. Absolutely. Annoyed by him in underperforming, trade him in. You'll be able to get a bargain trade because Pendlebury's underachieving, and then he's your best midfielder.
/ defender.
I actually wonder if he'd even be in...
Oh, Chris.
Like, at what point of the first round will he get taken?
5 to 10.
If. I mean, Treloar's gone past him, especially in Dream Team scoring.
Another show. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can head over to Twitter, where we are at the Draft Doctors, or head over to Facebook, search us for us there, or send us an email as to why Statement is completely wrong about Pendlebury.
And why John is completely wrong about his mid sting. All right, goodbye.
That is thedraftdoctors@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.